B, Wu, headed down south, way south to South America.
Yeah.
Brazil.
Brazil.
Yeah, that was amazing.
Mm.
Beautiful.
We want to know.
Very green.
Was it green?
Yeah.
Well, you were there in April, right? Most of April?
Actually, we flew there on the 29th. So I arrived on the 30th, and we started installing on the day after.
So yeah.
Yeah. So tell us what your event was about. What you were doing down there, primarily.
Okay. We had a show there. A group of us organized by Molière and André Duchesne with Commissaire Sylvie Parent.
Yeah.
She selected a number of works in this exhibition called Inside that was presented in China also in 2006.
Mm-hmm.
And the same group show was presented this year at Paso das Artes in Sao Paulo.
Yeah. Looks cool. There's pictures on the Molière, MOLIOR.ca website.
Yes. Yeah. And that was an amazing experience. In fact, I'm really grateful for these guys to organize all these exhibitions overseas, you know, to promote Canadian art.
Yeah. And it's doing a really interesting sweep of Canadian media artists in extremely unusual places for media artists to congregate. Brazil, China.
Yeah.
They're going all around the world.
Yeah, exactly. Peru, you know, India,
Mexico,
a whole bunch of places. So I think it's great opportunities for artists from here to kind of, you know, sit back and actually just do the artwork that they are good at doing, and having somebody else, you know, organize, you know, deal with
all the logistics.
Yes, the logistics.
And B, what were you presenting, just to let the listeners know, as part of this art group?
I had a piece called Abigram, which is a coat in which I've inserted some wireless cameras. There's actually three versions of this installation. One of which is a performance, actually. But in this case, it was the version where there isn't any computer involved. But basically, what happens is that the cameras film outwards. The public is invited to wear the coat, and the cameras actually film outwards.
The cameras are mounted in the coat, pointing out from the body, right?
Of the person. Yeah. Exactly. So basically, they register all your movements, and these movements are being projected straight onto the room where it's installed. So it's like a feedback loop, and so you have some kind of reaction off the room, pretty much, to your movements as you're wearing the coat.
As you're creating the images that the room is in.
So basically, it's a little disconcerting, to say the least. You have the whole room starting to move as soon as you make a move. So, it's interesting to see people all over the world, you know, react to the piece.
And you have the coat there in the space, and people are encouraged to put
wear
it on and wander.
Yeah. And you know what? Funny thing is, people do the same thing, whether it's in China or or in Brazil or in Montreal. They pretty much react the same.
And what do they
What is their reaction?
They try to understand where the cameras are, and they try to kind of put the image upwards, because the cameras are installed in such a way that the image isn't projected straight up, you know? So they try to actually reestablish the normal vision. So that's one thing. And so to do that, they actually, you know, contortionate themselves into different positions. So you can see kind of, they're kind of being choreographed
by
the coat that they're wearing.
And their desire
to normalize the environment. Yes,
interesting.
I just imagine like Cirque du Soleil.
Yeah,
in a weird way, you've brought Cirque du Soleil with your coat to the world, just kind contortioning, you know, themselves.
Yeah.
But that is interesting, that observation, that, you know, in so many different places, you've seen people do the same thing.
Yeah.
So that must be fun for you.
It's fun for me. And it's fun to underline the fact that, you know, technology, which is supposed to free us, You know, if you put it a little too close and you don't think about it too much, it's actually pretty much influencing you into behaviors. And I mean, the extension of this behavior kind of.
Yeah, direct control, basically, of your body by...
It alludes to that idea. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think it's working.
It's interesting because a lot of the show, the people that were in the show, the theme of inside is this kind of puzzle of where technology lives, outside in the coat, but then people pull it into their brain and try and control outside again.
Yep.
Big circle.
Yeah.
And this exhibit, how long was it in Sao Paulo for?
It's actually up until the end of July.
Okay.
Yeah, it's still
going. If I remember well. Yeah, it's up for a long time.
So you were there for basically the vernissage opening events.
Yeah, exactly.
And we want to know about Sao Paulo and Brazil. I guess maybe more first on a general kind of level. Had you ever been to Brazil?
No, I've never been to Brazil. So this was a great opportunity to visit. Sao Paulo is like, I didn't really get much chance to visit Sao Paulo except for one day where we had finished installed and before the day where we did, you know, the conferences and then the opening and the press conference, etc. So within that day, we walked around and I got to see the fact that it's actually, it's a huge city, you know, it's a business city. It wasn't quite as... I don't know, you know, like I was there, I went there with some kind of apprehension because you hear so much that Brazil is violent, etc.
Yeah.
I was pleased to see that, of course, there's disparities, you know, it's obvious, we all know it, but I felt fantastic, you know, walking around there, didn't feel threatened at all. It just, you know, people were lovely, really welcoming. The city is beautiful.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it.
Architecturally,
yeah. Some parts of it really, really quite beautiful. Yeah.
And how about technologically or multimedia-wise? What was your sense about, you know, like Montreal's got a real great multimedia art scene. I think it's people are quite wired here, you know, and interested in that. What was your sense there?
Well, it seemed to me that people were over there as well. Like, we met a group of people who work with Pure Data, who were actually talking of organizing some kind of convention like the one we had here in Montreal, the Pure Data Convention, maybe opening it a little bit more to open source software in a general way, used for multimedia to Linux and, you know, applications like the GIMP, etc. So... you know, people are aware of that. They're onto it. They're
pretty.
They
connected.
Work with it. They're connected. We went to a university. It was amazing. Like, you know, maybe we were privileged and we ended up in places that are, you know, well financed, etc. And I realize that it's not like that for everybody. But at least the people that we met have access to internet. They have access to computers.
So they were really able to benefit from the conferences and the artist talks that you gave, it sounds like.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We gave conferences to people in the School of Design. I think it was mainly sound design people. They knew what we were talking about.
they gave good questions.
Exactly, and they knew a little bit about open source, of course. I think open source has... you know, taken on quite a lot in South America, of course, because it's
free.
It's free, and people can beneficiate from it quite a lot.
Yeah, I think in other countries, other than North America, outside of maybe the West Coast, you see a lot more use of open source environments and tools.
Although they still need to be convinced. I met also, afterwards I went to Rio, and I did a bit of prospection over there. I met... mainly three different artists, and one of which is Tina Velo, who works in an art school down there. She has really interesting projects, some of which with children and involving the internet and open source and mobile phones, etc. But they had Macs in the school. You know, they had Macintosh, and they're still working with OS 10. And I was telling them, look, you know, go on the website for the Studio XX, and we have a wiki there. We try to put up as much information as we can to try and help people use open source and give, you know, facilitate that entry into the world of open source. So they still needed a little bit of convincing as far as, okay, is it stable enough? Do we, you know, is it easy for us to use, et cetera? So
the transition.
I did my little work there.
the advocate, the emissary.
Yeah.
Were there any initiatives in Sao Paulo or Rio for like a wireless, you know, Ile Sans Fil kind of network within, like free wireless within the cities?
I actually don't know.
Okay.
Yeah. That would be amazing. It would have been nice to investigate that. But
just wondering, because I know there are huge populations, and if there's, you know, initiatives for those populations to have access like that.
I didn't come across anything like that. And when I was down there in Rio, I stayed in Ipanema for a couple of days. And actually, one of the reasons why I had to move was because I couldn't get internet access properly. There was like a wireless router there, but it was really weak. The reception was really weak. From where I was, and so I couldn't use it, and I had to move to a hotel where you know, I could actually access the internet.
Yeah, where they had a real...
they had a wired connection in the room.
And real protocol.
Made it easy. Yes.
0101.88B.
Nice broadband, right? high speed.
High speed, yeah.
That's sort of the perils kind of traveling sometimes is we're so wired when we're here. And when, you know, you're far away somewhere enjoying whatever the nature, this new place that you're in, and then there's this nagging sort of behind you saying, I really want to check my email.
Yeah. Well, especially when you're trying to organize interviews with local artists, etc.
Yes,
so you have to have a communication.
You have to be able to meet people virtually at
least. Yeah, and I could have used the phone for that, but it was good to be able to do a bit of research, you know, on them, etc. So
And I find when you travel more and more, people even use their phones as like little mini computers. They text message you, but they don't want to pay for the phone call because of the change in cost.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
It's cheaper to use the internet. Yeah. When I travel in Europe, I say I'm not using my phone unless somebody really needs me.
Yeah.
Well, that's it. Exactly. Unless you're going to shell out money to actually get a cell phone in whatever respective place you're in. If you're not there for too long, you're right. Email is so much quicker.
Yeah, because it's hard to get a global phone here. That's what people don't realize. The phones that we have here are not global. They're locked down.
And, you have to open it.
Yes. I have a global one. I can show you how to do
me
that.
Me too. Yeah,
that's good.
And some people bring their cell phones to other places and try to get them cracked open and stuff, but you're always taking a risk.
Well, most of the ones you get, they'll fall apart if you crack them.
Yeah.
It's not so easy anymore. But remember, like, people who are bragging to me about getting their iPhones, and now it's only 200 and something instead of 600 and something, and you can sort of get service with Rogers in Canada.
Yeah, it's been announced finally.
Most of those features don't work anywhere outside of North America. So somebody thought he was so cool and took his groovy iPhone to Prague. Guess what?
Oh, no. And it didn't work.
It didn't work. You don't even get the little fish movie over there. Nothing.
So you were the girl from Ipanema for a while. And
I had that song in my head the whole time. It was kind of annoying, you know.
An earworm.
It's like, jeez.
How was Rio? What was your
amazing
feeling there?
Yeah. It's so beautiful. It's like the one of the most beautiful sights for a city that I've ever seen. There's so much green in there, and the beaches are so wide and, you know, amazing. The waves are fantastic, and there's the forest right in the middle of the city, like really the Amazonian forest, you know. I thought that was just fantastic. I love trees and stuff. So I went for walks in botanical gardens.
Sweet.
So that was a good balance from, you know, the technological talks that I had with the artists there and stuff. So,
so sounds like you'll be heading back to South America if you get the chance, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. Especially that they have, you know, there's a number of centers for artists, and they have residencies and things like that, so it's, you know, it's possible to go back and do some artwork, you know, make artwork.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Interesting, eh?
Yeah.
We're all thinking, I gotta go online and look at those residencies in Brazil, baby.
That's right. So if you're listening and you're an artist, yeah, check it out. You know,
yeah.
You could get there for January.
You could. I'm not. I don't know if. Oh, that's a little short.
Yeah, it's a little short. But you know, you got to plan winter visits anyway.
So. Well, that's right. That's the good weather. Well, you had pretty decent weather when you were down there.
Yeah. It was actually winter there. Okay. So, but of course, it was fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. 28 to 30.
It
no
was
humidity.
Mild.
Yeah. No boots and heavy coat and
nothing like that.
I think we were still wearing those in April.
Yeah, good stuff.
In Montreal in May. Yeah. It just got really nice and hot.
Mm-hmm. And now it's cool enough. I wanted to ask you a little bit about how it was to work with Sylvie Prant and the curatorial intention that she put forth for that show. It's really interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. It's good to see, like, you know, as an artist, you work with a particular intention.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes you have to let it, you know, being interpreted by other people and other people kind of pointing out other issues that the work underlines.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what Sylvie did, and that's great, you know, that's great to see. It's interesting.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Mm-hmm. She brought together a lot of work by people that I've seen the work in other contexts, and she's kind of re-envisioned it and taken it there. And it's really interesting to see your piece, the coat, the cameras, mixed with AE Labs, electron scanning microscopy, super close-up molecular images.
Yeah.
And then the kind of interactive, perversely interactive system that Lynn Hughes and Simone LaRoche had, where you're actually clearly doing some interactions between the person and the video.
Yeah.
All the different levels of these nuances of inside and outside.
Exactly, yes.
That she's pulled out of everything is marvelous.
Yeah, it's great. It's really good. The pieces bounce. You know, bounce on each other, and it creates a group show that is more than if they were each separately shown. I mean, the pieces are, you know, of course, very interesting on their own too, but they take a different angle when you put them together.
Yeah, so. Yeah, it does. It causes a whole nother vibration of interpretation and interaction with the public too.
Yeah, yeah. The public was quite there was a lot of people at the opening. It was fantastic. You know, they welcomed us really well. And
a beautiful space there, you say.
The space is huge. No, it was great.
Mm. What's the name again of the center where...
Passau das Artes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. And if you go to...
And the Molière website is...
Is Molière, Molior.ca. And right there on their website, they have links to the inside show, some lovely press information, radio and TV interviews, photos, and then kind of a little survey of each artist. It's nice.
So that was good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Congratulations. We're very proud of you.
Well, thanks.
Thank you.
We're happy to hear about South America.
Yes.
And your experience.
Thanks.
And
thanks for interviewing me on the show. That was